Please be seated. And good morning. I'm Judge Keenan. Judge Wynn and Senior Judge Hamilton are here to hear your cases. And we will begin with the first case, number 10-4689, United States versus John Charles Wellman. Mr. Byrne, are you ready?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jonathan Byrne. I'm here on behalf of the defendant below, John Wellman. There are three issues in this case, and I'd like to begin with the issue that sort of kicked everything off. This case began when police officers in West Virginia went to Mr. Wellman's house armed with a warrant to search it. That warrant was based largely on information they had received from a task force in Wyoming that had identified by hash values only five alleged images or files of child pornography that were located on an IP address in the Southern District of West Virginia, and then the officers in West Virginia tracked that IP address to Mr. Wellman. The application for the search warrant did not provide any description of the files that were allegedly contained child pornography. They obviously did not contain the files themselves. The only assertion as to the nature of the files themselves was that the officer said they're child pornography, and the magistrate judge accepted that representation.
To what extent do we factor into our analysis the fact that this was a law enforcement specialty of the Wyoming police who made the representation to the West Virginia police? I mean, isn't that something, considering the probable cause standard, that it is a lower threshold standard than many in the criminal law, why isn't that something that gets them over the bar?
I don't think it's something that gets them over the bar in this case for two reasons, Your Honor. One, this was the first time the West Virginia Task Force had ever gotten information like this from the Wyoming Task Force. There's no prior record there of...
They weren't reliable informants?
Well, to a certain extent, Your Honor. And when you're talking about the child pornography arena, courts have recognized, including this one, that there's some special factors that make it a more difficult analysis for probable cause than some other criminal investigations. And so the West Virginia officers are presented with this assertion from the Wyoming Task Force. And as I said, they had no prior experience with the Wyoming Task Force. They don't know how exacting their standards are. They don't know how they would match standards they use in an investigation that started in West Virginia. The second reason I don't think that gets them over the hurdle is because at the time of this investigation, the West Virginia officers had not been trained in this kind of peer-to-peer file-sharing investigation with regards to child pornography. So they weren't well-versed in what the Wyoming Task Force would have been doing on the back end to produce this information. And the officers in West Virginia could have very easily satisfied the requirement to produce probable cause by contacting the officers in Wyoming and either saying, hey, explain to us how you all got this, what are these files, are they images, are they still images, are they movies, what do they depict? Do they depict sexual acts, or is it the more nebulous image that falls under the definition of child pornography because of the particular way it's framed or something like that? The officers didn't do any of that. They just took the assertion that this is child pornography and ran with it to the magistrate.
Well, yeah, I think you're overlooking what the West Virginia police did once they got the information. Tell me about that, why that doesn't answer a lot of the questions that you just posed.
Well, I think the two things that
they didn't just take the information and do nothing.
But they took the information and tracked the IP address that was linked to these files to Mr. Wellman. The officer discovered that Mr. Wellman was a prior convicted sex offender who was not currently registered.
Okay, doesn't that go? Doesn't that,
that plays into the analysis, but I don't think that gets them over the bar, because neither one of those really contribute to confirming the information about whether these files constitute child pornography. None of them go to the nature of the files, what they depicted, and precisely what they were.
Well, even if what you say is plausible, what about the Leon exception? This warrant was issued by a state circuit court judge, was it not?
It was a state judge. I don't recall if it was a circuit judge or a magistrate judge, Your Honor.
I think it was a circuit judge.
It may have been.
All right. So they certainly acted in good faith once they had the warrant that it was valid.
The Leon good faith exception does not apply in situations where the judge issuing the warrant simply acts as a rubber stamp for the police. And I think the concerns for that were expressed very well by the late Judge Michael in his dissent in the Gathrum decision, where he said the whole point of the warrant requirement for the Fourth Amendment is that you have a neutral, detached magistrate who makes the decision that there's probable cause to invade someone's home, in this case. And in situations like this, where the officer simply comes in and says, I have probable cause, and the judge says, yes, you do, issues warrant, that's not sufficient. An analogy I came up with last night was that a warrant application should be like solving a math problem in school. You have to show your work. It's not good enough to simply come up and say, I have probable cause, and the judge can then sign off on that. And
it was a 23-page affidavit.
Yes, Your Honor. Although that's largely made up of the training and background of the West Virginia officer, which doesn't get into the nature of the images, which is, after all, what they were going to be searching for.
Well, I know you're arguing that they should have presented an image to the state circuit judge, but that's not required.
No, and we don't argue that it's required that they present an image, but there has to be some description of what the images are, so that the judge that issues the warrant is the one that makes the decision that there's probable cause to believe these images constitute child pornography, not the officer. Because if the officer gets to make that determination, the warrant requirement itself is pretty much a moot point. And then this is also a situation where, unlike the Gathrum case that I mentioned earlier, the officer presenting the warrant had never seen these images and had never gotten any description of them himself. So if the magistrate or the issuing judge had wanted some information about them, he could not have even gotten that information from the officer who presented the application to get the warrant required, to have the warrant issued.
Now, in Gathrum, the officers who applied for the warrant had seen the images. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in this case, no, the officers did not. But in Gathrum, didn't they simply recite the fact that the images contained sexually explicit conduct? And so really, how is that application different on its face? Are you saying that we have to consider the knowledge of the officer as opposed to the factual representation on the warrant? I thought we were circumscribed by the corners of the warrant in determining its sufficiency, the affidavit in determining its sufficiency.
Well, I think you're circumscribed by the corners of the warrant and the fact that the officer could have provided additional information to the magistrate if the magistrate sought that information. And I think, in Gathrum, we argued that the description the officer provided was not sufficient because all it did was track statutory language. And this court basically didn't reach that and said Leon applied. But even in that instance, the statutory language makes some representation of what the images are. Again, gets back to this, the distinction between images of sexual activity versus the more nebulous, unduly lascivious images. And so at least the magistrate in that case knew what kind of images we're dealing with, knew they were still pictures and not movies. In this case, there just is no information whatsoever as to what these files actually were.
typically in a confidential informant type instance in which you seek to show reliability, you have to, it's not known to everybody. You kind of have to delve into facts that maybe the officers would only know.
Yes.
But here you have an agency whose task, apparently, apparent being the fact that they so stated and everybody sort of takes it, is to determine, you know, the existence of child pornography. I mean, that apparently is known. And the facts surrounding in terms of the reliability of this evidence is not something that's hinging out there on the knowledge of the officers alone. It's out there. Either this group is good or it's not good. In a determination of it. And so I'm wondering when information is received of this type, and again, when you have the kind of technological use in this instance, fingerprints and things like that, that even these officers, even though they're not trained with this specific thing, there's enough to know they have to match it up, and they've done that to some extent. And given the low threshold it takes to secure a warrant, of course, you say, all of this is taking the judge out of being neutral and detached because he doesn't have much. But all of this is in front of the judge, and I know I'm conflating the good faith with the initial determination of the warrant. But I do think that they have, you know, there is some connectivity that if you can show that, it takes away the business that he was just acting ministerially in the process of it. So I'm wondering that, you know, are there cases in which it has been held that receipt of information of this type from an organization of this type whose job and specialty is to do this work, who provides information that provides these so-called fingerprints that ties it in to this defendant's computer, and then pornography is sort of their business. Is there something that say that's not enough for officers to rely on to do something, as Senior Judge Hammond has indicated, more, which they did?
Your Honor, the district court relied on a case out of the Eighth Circuit called Cartier, which addressed that issue in the context of the FBI relying on a similar kind of task force that the Spanish law enforcement authorities had set up. But the court found in that case that the FBI was aware of their reliability in prior cases. There's no evidence in this case that the West Virginia police knew of the reliability of the Wyoming task force. This was the first time they had dealt with it, and there's no record.
How would you know of the reliability? Is that based in that case on the fact they'd used them before? You would think the first time they used them, you couldn't do that and says, you know, we've done it before. At some point in time when you're starting out, it has to be based on something other than we've done it before.
Yes, you're right. I think that's right. And I think in this case, when you're interacting with another agency for the first time, the easiest thing to do is pick up the phone and call that officer and talk to him and say, you know, okay, these five images, what are they? How did you find them? Yeah, we don't do this sort of stuff here. Give me, you know, the 101 on how this all worked. The officers didn't do that. It could have been a five-minute conversation. And then the warrant application, we've got what these files allegedly are, and we don't have this issue.
And what if even that information is relatively easy to get? I mean, the fact that they didn't take that step, if in fact it turns out that's exactly what they would say, you know, we do all this stuff. And I assume there's something written on this organization outside of just having to call them up. There are things out there that probably been published by ACs who use this information.
There may be, Your Honor, but there wasn't any of that presented in the court below. It would be the government's burden to show that reliability.
And so, one last question on that. If it was within the province of the judge's knowledge that this organization was something that, hey, he had seen come before and show, would that be material in determining whether he was not just being ministerial in the way in which he's doing
his job? I think if there was evidence to that effect, that would bolster both the probable cause determination and the Leon analysis, because the judge obviously can bring to bear whatever his or her experience is, but again, we don't know what that is in this case. In the 50 seconds I've got left, there are two other issues at work in this case. One involves count one, which was the obscenity charge that Mr. Wellman was convicted of, and in the brief we set out why the district court erred by not instructing the jury that they had to find that Mr. Wellman knew that the image at issue was obscene. And then the other issue...
That's requiring the defendant to know the legal status of the materials. I mean, didn't the Supreme Court say in Hamling that all the defendant has to be aware of is the character of the materials and not the legal status, whether it qualifies as obscenity?
In the context of a much broader statute, yes, Your Honor. But two cases that the Supreme Court has decided since Hamling, Excitement Video and Staples, which we discussed in our brief and are completely absent from the government's brief, put a much higher importance on reading mens rea requirements into statutes that lack them. And particularly in Excitement Video, the court said that the presumption of a scienter requirement should apply to every element that might reach innocent behavior. And in a situation like this, whether the obscene nature of the image is the element on which the illegality turns, because of the statute under which the count one statute is an obscenity statute, not a child pornography statute. And so if the image at issue is a visual depiction of any kind that depicts a minor engaging in sexual activity but is not obscene, it's lawful to possess. So my time's up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Kovaniak?
May it please the court, defendant focuses challenge on the lack of an image, but the police had much more than that. They had information that from another law enforcement agency is presumed reliable. They haven't offered anything to challenge that. The judge, and it was a circuit court judge, not a magistrate in West Virginia, magistrates required to have a high school education, this is a judge, he had more than he had the description that did provide information that was child pornography, the hash value. The warrant affidavit did go through in detail how hash values
go into the good faith exception.
No, sir. Respectfully, the information in front of the judge was what he needed to determine it was child pornography. It came from a reliable source. It went straight to the investigators, and the hash values prove what they're looking at. You could have an image, and as technology progresses, it becomes easier probably to change images and make it appear as if something is not. These images are confirmed through the hash value. Simply showing an image or describing it doesn't go as far as this unique identifier. Armed with that information, they did all the other investigation that corroborated what was provided to them by the Wyoming Task Force. One of the things counsel pointed out was this lack of experience with this task force. They were all part of this national task force. Some 40-some agencies were members. It's the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. They go through the same type of training. They know how each other operate. These things provide information or evidence of the reliability. It's almost to the point where he wants the court to view this law enforcement agency in a similar vein as a citizen informant or even an anonymous tipster. That's not the case. Like I said, there is a presumption for the reliability of the sister law enforcement agency.
The main case you rely on for that proposition of a presumption of reliability?
Cartier does touch on that. And I think there's another decision talking about, I think it's the Yusuf decision. But basically, the important thing here also is the defendant doesn't challenge that the information was reliable. He wants the officer to provide more. But here the standard doesn't require that. By the time trial comes, yes. But at this stage, in the early parts of the investigation, the standard is much lower. It's a fair probability whether evidence of the crime is going to be found at the place to be searched. That information was all put forward to the judge, including the training with the other task force agencies, how their training is similar, all the techniques used by law enforcement to ferret out and find child pornography.
Do you understand the defendant's argument, at least initially, it is that this Wyoming task force is was never used by this particular agency before. They received the information, and they never verified with the task force itself that, in fact, it was what it purported to be or that there was pornography there. And they had no basis. They never used them, as he points out in the FBI case, that the court in the Eighth Circuit said that they'd used them before. They never used them, so they had no basis for determining the reliability of this agency. You mentioned the presumption of the agency, and I'm curious about that. But I mean, aside from that, if there is no such presumption of agency, but if it is, tell me directly where it is. As you indicated to Judge Keenan, that there is such a presumption that an agency like the Wyoming would, in fact, be reliable, and then it shifts the burden, I guess, to the defendant.
Well, talking specifically about experience with the task force, like I said, these task force officers become certified to be part of this group of specialized investigators have to go through the training. They go through the same training, and Corporal Eldridge put that into the search warrant affidavit. That way, they do have some familiarity that goes beyond just the fact that they have a badge, so we got to believe them. And if the defendant had evidence that they are unreliable, this is the time to present it, or they should have presented it below. They don't have that. There's no reason to doubt it. It's a lot like the Spanish Guardia.
Well, they would have to show the unreliability if there was a presumption of liability. But if you have to establish it in the first instance, then the burden is on you to establish that it's reliable or that evidence was reliable for the officers.
I understand, Your Honor. And that's exactly the focus that I was trying to express. The agencies work together. It is a very specialized part of investigating criminal conduct. Child pornography is unique, and the techniques that they use in this task force are consistent. So it's not like the Spanish Guardia, where a foreign law enforcement agency provides the information. This is all part of the same group of task force members. Defendant also challenges the jury instruction, and just briefly, I don't think the requirement that he wants to read into the statute is workable in this case. I don't think you can require a jury to find that the defendant understood the legal definition of child pornography at the time he downloaded it. Looking at the instructions as a whole, they provided everything required. They read the statute to the jury. Then they broke it down into its elements, including the requirement that it has to be obscene. And then they defined obscenity, which there's no challenge. Submit that the jury instruction was appropriate and consistent with the case law that is on the that issue. He didn't mention much about the Eighth Amendment challenge, but I'd note for the court the consistent cases that say it's correct for Congress to punish recidivist behavior more harshly than the first-time offender. That's what happened here. The sentence was within the statutory limits and didn't go beyond that. There should be a lack of any proportionality review when that happens. I know there were some decisions out there that talk about a de facto life sentence, but they don't justify the type of detailed review that's discussed when in reference to life in prison without mercy or even the death penalty. Here, it's the fact that he was caught and prosecuted late in life, it doesn't make this cruel and unusual punishment. If the court doesn't have any more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Just a couple things very briefly, Your Honors. On the jury instruction issue, I think it's critical in understanding that, and this is something the government glossed over in its brief as well, count one, which Mr. Wellman was convicted, is not a child pornography statute. It is an obscenity statute. It was enacted because the Supreme Court struck down Congress's attempt to criminalize as child pornography images that were produced without the use of an actual child, which was how in New York versus Ferber, child pornography was carved out of the First Amendment in the first place. 1466A, which is the statute at issue in count one, was enacted in a response to that when the court specifically said in the Ashcroft decision these you could still be prosecuted for obscenity. So it's not a child pornography statute. It's an obscenity statute, and I think that's important to understanding the whole situation. Going back to the search issue very briefly, in terms of the unreliability of the information, the elephant in the room is the fact that these images, although they were what the search warrant was based on, were never recovered from anything in Mr. Wellman's house. Now, it's axiomatic that a search is not made good based on what it uncovers, and the converse of that would be a search isn't bad just because it doesn't uncover what they were looking for.
Do you agree with Mr. Kovaniak's assertion that information from other law enforcement agencies is presumed reliable?
Yes, I would disagree with that. And a law enforcement agency with which the receiving agency had no prior experience with. And there's a lot of talk about their training.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. You disagree?
I disagree that there is a presumption of reliability, yes, Your Honor.
Do you have a particular case that you'd like to invite our attention to?
Unfortunately, I do not, okay. Your Honor. But in a situation where a lot was made of training and experience and how these groups are all trained in the same way, but from the record, the West Virginia officers had not been trained on the type of investigation that the Wyoming officers had done at that point. So that can't help the analysis. Touching very briefly on the Eighth Amendment issue, the district court below was correct that the sentence imposed on Mr. Wellman is a de facto life sentence. Even if you take away the 10-year additional mandatory minimum for count two, which is the subject of our Eighth Amendment challenge, he still has a 15-year sentence and will most likely die in prison. Although courts have said repeatedly that criminal history is a legitimate basis for enhancing someone's sentence, it's worth pointing out that the criminal history in this case, which was a 1987 conviction for sexual abuse, a single conviction, it's enhanced the mandatory minimum and statutory maximum on count one. The mandatory minimum went from 5 years to 15 years. It kicked in this 10-year consecutive mandatory sentence, which was the subject of count two, and it was also part of the criminal history calculations under the guidelines. So this conviction, the single conviction, actually increased Mr. Wellman's sentence in three different ways. So I think that's important to the analysis. If there are no other questions.
I don't believe so.
Thank you very much.
We will come down and greet counsel, and then we'll proceed directly to the next case.